Mirabelle!
Hurry! He's dead, Mirabelle.
He's not dead! You lie! You lie!
Mirabelle!
Lie!
Mirabelle!
That night, after the prince made his entry into Carlisle, I was climbing into bed in John Cumberledge's house when my door opened. Father stood there, white as a clean stone. He stumbled. I thought he would fall and ran to catch him. His nails dug into my shoulder.
What is it, Father? Are you sick?
I do be sick and unhappy. I shouldn't be here. I'll leave you.
Stay, Father.
Go to bed, Davy. There's nothing you can do for this sickness.
Rogue Harries by Hugh Walpole. Dramatized in four parts by Eric Pringle. Part 3, The Wild Marriage.
I did not know that all his hopes had died that day on a street in the city. And when we came home, he was closed up, happier silent than speaking, happier alone than with company, happiest roving the fells like a man lost, searching for something he could never find. So matters stood for 11 years. In that time, my affairs progressed beyond all expectation. My Liverpool enterprise grew to half a dozen ventures. I bought land in Borrowdale, land beyond Keswick towards Stradbeck, and more land at the farther end of Bassenthwaite near Cockermouth. I took an office in Keswick and tried to interest Father in bills of lading, but he did not care for it, and his unpopularity hampered the business at every step. So he slipped back to Harry's, and Harry's and roving gave him a kind of restless contentment. But always he was looking for what, and listening for what. We kept company with a haunted man. Then, one grand summer day in 1756, Deb and I rode into Keswick. We were to stay with Cousin Raisley and Sister Mary in Uncle Pomfret's house and attend the first ball of the season at the assembly rooms.
Deb, rein him in! You're wild!
I'm excited! I may be 33, a very great age, I know, but I can still get excited by a ball and a new horse and a beautiful afternoon. Oh, I don't know how you can stay so calm, Davy. You smile away at your thoughts of chips and grain, and it's so irritating I'd like to stick a pin in you to wake you up.
I'm awake. Look, isn't Derwentwater splendid?
Oh, magical. You know, I often walk from Harry's to sit beside it. It is a holy place for me.
It will change, though. We're coming to a new time. The north is opening up, and with the new toll roads, our valley will no longer be enclosed. People will change, too.
They should change. They're cruel to Father.
That's because he's stranger than ever these last few years. So they fear him more than ever.
He's never been like anybody else. He used to frighten me, but now I love him as I never did. I'd be proud to comfort him if he'd let me.
Well, he'll not let you. Or me, or anyone. Oh, I love him more every year and understand him less.
Father begins where we leave off. He's in a country we've never even seen a map of.
Yet he influences us. He affects me in everything I do. I don't know how he doesn't try to and keeps telling me to break away and forget him. I'll have to do that soon, Deb. I'm 36 and I hate Harry's. Am I never to have my own life, or children, or freedom? Why do I love Father so much when I don't understand him and he infuriates me?
Because you're his son. Anyway, you're lucky because you're a man. I'm younger than you, yet I'm an old maid. I could have loved a man, but no man has ever wanted me.
Well, they don't know your worth. But don't lose heart, Deb. Who knows? At the ball, maybe.
The ball. The ball! Come on, Appleseed. Let's go to the ball.
Bravely said, sister. Speak up for yourself.
It's time I did. I'm 33 years old. And here is my sister Mary, Lady of Keswick, in a wig decorated with pom-poms.
David, Deborah, see how our children have grown. Cynthia is 2 and Comfort 5. Children, greet your aunt and uncle. Are they not fine?
Aye.
Other Harrys are gathered here. Grandison, Mary and Cousin Pelham from London, little Uncle Harcourt from Ravenglass, funereal Dorothy Forster from Northumberland, all visiting Keswick and all going to the ball. Where is Uncle Pomfret? Alone in his room, deserted in his own house, his legs swollen to twice the size and laid out on a chair in front of him.
Little Deb, here's your poor uncle, 78 years old, rotten with gout, and nobody caring whether he lives or dies.
Don't cry, uncle.
Yeah, what else is there to do? When poor Janice died, I thought I'd have some peace, but there's too much peace. Tell me, how does your father, my brother? He was closer to me than any of them, you know. But I was afraid of your aunt. And Francis didn't want me. He didn't want any of us. Here. Bend me at a moment, little darling. And I'll whisper thee something.
What is it?
When thou hast a man, don't take one too clever like thy father. For he'll dream without thee. Nor stupid like the Uncle Bomb. But he'll not dream at all. Do thou the dreaming, and he'll never leave thee. Hey. Right. Am I not right? Hey.
Why must you be so impatient, Deborah?
Because it's nearly 11 o'clock and the ball is half over.
Gentry do not arrive early. It is common.
Oh, look! I would clap my hands if I dared. But in this company I do not dare. To me, the crowded little assembly room is paradise. Shining candles, a little gallery where the musicians are. And this is only the second ball of my whole life.
Thank you for my new dress, David.
A rose colour suits you, Debbie. You look young tonight.
Raisley, sulky and greedy, slips into the alcove to help himself to syllable. Mary moves about as if she owns everybody. But David is superior to everyone in the room. Oh, what fun country dances are. Why have I not been to more? Look how the girls cluster together and make eyes at the men. Strange, isn't it, that I never had a girlfriend of my own? If someone doesn't invite me to dance soon...
Excuse me. I spy a little room on the bench beside you. If I might avail myself.
You may, sir.
Thank you. Tis a squeeze, I'm afraid.
Squeeze, by all means. A clergyman. Short and sturdy with a chubby face. Probably someone's private chaplain, for he looks a gentleman. Strong looking. Fresh faced. Fine eyes. Very pleasant.
I'm sorry. It's too tight for you.
No.
It's just that I wanted... that is...
Pray, sir, be seated.
I fear I incommode you.
Look, there is room.
Oh, I will sit then. I will. The music is excellent, is it not?
Oh, for a little place, I agree.
Oh, it is a wonderful place. Which has grown more wonderful.
He says he has newly come to the neighbourhood from Rutlandshire. He's in charge of a Cockermouth parish and is interested in nature generally and birds particularly. That is a great link between us.
Would you care for a little refreshment?
Yes, I would. Thank you. We walk to the alcove together. Does this exceed proper modesty? I don't know. But I'm 33, and he's a clergyman, so it's probably all right.
Forgive me for not introducing myself. I am Gordon Sunwood, of the Sunwoods of Gloucestershire.
Deborah Herries, of Herries in Borrowdale.
Well, I'm delighted to meet you. Miss Herries?
Yes.
I am a bachelor, 38 years old.
His hand is touching mine. By accident?
The reason for my singularity is that I have not until now seen anyone who combines the qualities of a saintly spirit, a beautiful person, and a merry heart. The last is most important, for I enjoy a joke, and I find nothing in Holy Scripture to condemn it. Of course, were I ever so fortunate as to meet such a fair divinity, it is unlikely she would be willing to share a modest parsonage and a slender stipend. Though to that, I can add a little fortune left to me by an aunt. And in the case of offspring...
He must have been drinking. But he's charming, too. And I don't care if he is a clergyman. I like him.
May I have the pleasure, Miss Harris?
You may, Mr. Sunwood.
Thank you. Allow me.
I like his round bullet head and apple cheeks. I like his warm voice and twinkling eyes. And we haven't spoken for more than 10 minutes. Deborah Harris, you're having an adventure with a man.
What's this, Deb? A clergyman?
He is the Reverend Gordon Sunwood. He has a living in Cockermouth. He's been very attentive, David.
Oh, so I saw. He was strutting and preening like a cockerel before its mate. And is he already a suit?
Oh, that is unkind. He has merely talked with me a little.
Ah.
Only, he is interested in nature and has a remarkable knowledge of birds.
Then beware his bird nesting. Oh, dear Deb, your eyes are shining. You look prettier than I've ever seen you.
Because I'm happy, Davy.
You've borne the isolation of Herries for so long with never a complaint. You deserve happiness.
David! Keep me company.
Coming, Aunt. Do you mind, Deb?
Of course not. Go. Where is my little clergyman? He said he must not monopolise me, and I expect it's wrong for me to look for him. But I don't care.
Miss Harris?
Mr. Sunwood.
Since I left you, I have thought only of the moment when I might return. Shall we walk a little? Will you take my arm?
I will. It is extremely crowded.
And hot. Too hot, do you not think?
Why? Yes, a little.
Then perhaps some fresh air?
We pass behind hanging curtains. He opens a door. And lo, we're in a little yard at the back of the assembly rooms, under a sky sheeted with stars.
There's a breeze. I'm afraid you may take cold. Come close. I will warm you.
Yes. Thank you.
Deborah, may I write to you?
Yes.
And Deborah, would you lift up your face?
Yes, I would. This is the first kiss from a lover I ever received. I like it.
There is no rain in the world like the rain of this country. When we rode home next morning, the world had disappeared behind it. The lake was invisible, the hills were smothered in cloud, and our horses plunged along a path that was utter mire and ruin. But we were happy. I had liked meeting the other Harries. And Deb was in a world of her own.
I'm born again by a kiss. I shall marry Gordon Sunwood. He will ask me. Oh, he's honest and good, and what if he is a clergyman? I am very suited to be a clergyman's wife, and the mother of a clergyman's children.
Deb, look! There's Father waiting for us by the gate. Something's happened.
Something bad? To stand in this rain?
No. He's laughing. Look!
Deb! Davy! Get down! I must talk to you before you go in.
Come close. There is a lady in the house. She's strange here. Be kind to her for my sake. I'm to marry her this day.
Marry, Father?
Today?
I went into Keswick yesterday and have the license. Don't be angry with me for not telling you. For 11 years I've served my apprenticeship, and now she has come to me of her own free will. These last few months have been hard for her, so be gentle. Come in now.
If this is for your happiness, Father, heaven bless her, whoever she may be.
As we entered the dining hall, I expected some opulent woman like Alice Press who had caught Father's fancy. Instead, a girl in a fantastically coloured dress of orange and crimson crouched by the fire, her head in her hands. When she saw us, she jumped up as if to defend herself, and I recognised a vagabond girl I used to meet long ago on the valley roads, begging and mocking me. But that was a child. This a woman, with a body tall and grown but bitterly thin, and a peaked face set like a mask with hostile eyes.
Parabelle, this is my son David.
We are old friends. Now we will be new friends.
And this is my daughter Deborah.
I hope you'll be happy with us.
Come with me, Davy. We'll be back soon. You will make better friends without us.
What can I say to this fierce creature? It's incredible that Father should marry her. But everything about him has always been incredible to me. Mirabelle's a pretty name.
It's a crazy name. A man's name. My mother had it from a play. You can hate me as much as you like.
Why should I hate you?
Because I'm in your house. It is not my will to be here. I have no will anymore. But once, many years ago, your father told me to come. And I came yesterday because I was hungry. They put me in Kendall Prison for 3 months for a wanton. And then for 2 weeks, I was without food.
Oh, Mirabelle.
Your father has been good to me. So I will marry him because he wishes it. When he wearies of me, I will go away again.
In prison? How cruel.
You don't know. I might have robbed or lain with men, asking them in the streets.
Well, even if you did, it was still cruel.
I did not. But only because I was proud. I'm no longer proud. Anyone can do anything with me.
Has Father known you long?
Since I was 8 years old. Now I'm 27.
Oh, you'll be happy now. We will make you happy.
Happy or unhappy is nothing. I can never be happy again. But when you have been hungry long enough, you must have food. I will work for your father and give him what he needs, if I can.
It was like a dream. The ceremony was in Rothswaite Chapel, and Father and Mirabelle made an outlandish pair walking there from Harry's. He very proud and dressed in a grand suit of cinnamon and gold, which fitted oddly with his ugly scarred face and long grey hair, and she on his arm, hanging her head and looking like a gypsy from a fair. Deborah and I walked behind. We were joined by an old woman from a cottage door, men and women working in the fields, children playing, and a wizened little hunchbacked peddler selling his wares outside the inn. So the little chapel was full, and Francis Herries took Mirabelle Starr for his wedded wife, and kissed her, and walked with her outside into a silent crowd of people.
Friends and neighbours, you are welcome at my house. Enter and drink to the bride.
Drink to the bride?
Aye. Why not?
A bride's gift. What will you have, lady? Cambrics, gold buttons, watch bottles, a gift for the beautiful bride.
I wanted to know who the feast was for, Deb.
Oh, it's for the world. There are so many on the stairs, they can't move up or down.
Help yourselves and drink. There's a punch of brandy and arrack to warm your hearts. Oh. Hands round the cups and drink. Drink!
There's something false in this wildness. And Mirabelle's silence makes it even stranger. David is doing what he can to be friendly, but I feel a crisis coming.
Lovely lady, Mirabelle.
You there, peddler. Keep your distance.
I would touch you. Me touch. Just see her.
No!
Get away from her.
A kiss from the happy brown.
Oh, dear. Get out! Get out! Get out! Go on! Get out of here! Get out of here!
Why? Look at them. They're called Father a Devil. Well, now the devil is after them.
Get out of my house! You and the rest, peddler! Out!
Well, Davy. Our first hospitality.
Well, Father, you made the punch too mighty for them.
Well, wife. Our house. Our bedroom. Our bed. Mirabelle, speak to me. Say you trust me.
Yes, I trust you.
I would carry you to the bed and undress you. Much of my life has been evil, but I never felt shame because my eyes were set on a dream. Always I knew that somewhere or in some person my fulfillment lay, and that when I found it, I would find myself. I knew I could be honorable if I could find a place for my honor, so I was always searching. Mirabelle, I have years left to me and I'm strong. There's no task too hard for me. Now I have you.
Oh, poor Jake.
That is nothing now. If you stay with me, no unhappiness can touch me.
You know I loved one.
I know.
When he was killed, I was slain too. Princess, I'm a dead woman. I care for you. I feel sorry for you. But I have no love for you. I can never love anyone again, I think. So I wish you did not love me so much.
I can't help it.
You've shown me more kindness than anyone ever. So I will do my very best to please you. Oh, Francis.
It's all right. There, my girl. Everything will come right. You'll see.
After the wild marriage party, the valley determined that Rogue Herries had married a witch. But as months passed, the village women began to pity her and tell how she had been in love with the devil who had disguised himself as a beautiful young man, and how, when she saw her sin, she had fled from him and been broken-hearted ever since. But no one knew anything. Mirabelle remained apart, reserved and secret. Yet she was so gentle, so ungrudging in her service, wanting only to give shyly, as if she had no right to think her gifts would be received, that Deborah and I became greatly attached to her. Still, we knew nothing. Until one unexpectedly warm day in February, Deborah rode out with Mirabelle to Winlatter, and resting above Bassenthwaite, told her about her little clergyman and the Keswick ball, and their kiss under the stars.
Isn't it foolish to be so in love at my age? But then he is not a boy either. I fancy we are greatly suited.
Deborah, there's no foolishness. To be in love. Tell me some more of him.
A letter came yesterday from Cockermouth. Shall I read it you?
Oh, yes. Read it.
My dearest friend, when I had read your letter, I grumbled, for I would have had it so lengthy, the reading would stretch until I might see you again.
I have read it twelve times over. And now could read it blindfold, and make no mistake. I love you with so great a devotion that you are always in my heart, and never away from me. A moment ago, I was busy on my sermon, whose text is, Suffer the Little Children. When am I next to expect a letter? You know how I love you, my dearest, and that with every hour, my love increases.
The rest is nothing. This must seem foolish to you.
No, Deborah. That is a very kind letter. No one has ever written me a letter. He would have.
Oh, Mirabel, what's the matter?
You're all so kind to me, and I want to return your goodness, but I'm outside it. I want to come inside your friendliness, but my spirit is dead.
Have you had a tragedy?
All my life there has been tragedy, though never one that touched me until the last. My father was murdered, and my mother died on the fell in the rain with no one near us. Then I was with my uncle, thieving, hiding, escaping, always moving on. I was ravished when I was 12. I had seen 4 men murdered before I was 16.
Oh, Mirabel.
But nothing could touch me. I was apart. I wasn't there to be touched. Then your father found me in a cave on Honister. I told him I wanted to be free, by myself. So we went away. But I remembered him. He's not easy to forget. Francis is a whole man, not a piece of one.
Yes, he is.
I didn't care for him then. I cared for no one. Only the memory of my mother made me lonely sometimes. And when men wanted me, I was lonely because I hated men. And then we came to Carlisle. There was a man there. His name was Thorn. He was hideous. Squat, black, always cold to the touch. He came to my bed, but I fought him and forced him away. After that, he watched me. He was always there, watching. Then Harry found me, and we loved at the very first sight. He was beautiful, Deborah. He was brave and noble-hearted and a grand poet. And he was mine, and I was his. Then, Deborah... Thorn stabbed Harry in the back, and he fell dead at my feet.
Oh, no.
What shall I do? I am not alive. When Harry fell, I fell. How shall I live if he cannot come back to me?
Hush, hush now.
He tries to come. He beats at the window. When I lie beside your father, I hear him crying. When I move about the dark house, he's a light ahead of me. I can never come to him, and he can never come to me. And I want him so. Deborah, what shall I do when you are so kind to me, and your father loves me so, and I am only a ghost in the middle of you? Oh, what shall I do?
Oh, it will pass. You're not alone anymore. We love you.
It will never pass. It is 11 years now, and it was yesterday he died at my feet.
Rain is coming.
It's cold. Let us go home.
How terrible this is. She cannot give Father anything. I thought, in her strange way, she must love him, but she does not, she cannot. How can this end if not in disaster? Oh, poor father.
That was the moment Deborah first truly loved our father without any sense of fear or dismay. She was overwhelmed with pity for him, caught, after all his rough and lonely life, into a great passion for someone who could not return it. She thought of all his goodness and gentleness these last months, and with what quiet courtesy he waited on Mirabel and cared for her. poor Mirabelle. Nothing was in her that Father needed, yet she was his only need.
Won't you come in, Father? They storm!
I love it! Look, Deb! Listen! One more gust, and everything will tumble!
Father! Father, I love Mirabelle!
I'm old for a new husband, aren't I? Bent and twisted? Deb, will you not marry before it's too late?
One day, Father, but not now. Not just now.
Next morning, Francis Herries took his wife into Keswick to show her off. They arrived to find the square thronged with people.
Has there been some trouble?
What's happening?
It's the Methodist, sir. George Wakefield's preaching.
He's a brave man. 5 years ago, they stoned a Methodist preacher here.
Oh, times are different now. Nobody will stone Mitten. Why don't you stay and listen?
Can we, Francis?
If we can see what's going on. Let's move higher up. I've heard of this, Wakefield. They say he has the power to move multitudes and will face all dangers for his religion. Who are you looking for?
Nobody. Nobody.
My friends! My brothers!
There he is!
I am come to preach the gospel to all who wish to hear. In your lives, you've heard many times of the righteousness of Jesus Christ. And every time you've been weary or indifferent or busy with affairs. Yet, the trumpeters are crossing the hills, moving down the valleys, and after them, the cohorts of the saints, and after them, the great judge himself. Who in this valley will be ready for him and that awful army? Even now, outside your door, there comes a summoning blast. No time for preparation. No time for hiding the things that should not be seen. The judge is here. Oh, my hearers, the wrath to come.
Harry.
Mirabelle.
Oh, Harry.
Sir, are you ready? For even as you stand here now, so it is certain you will stand before your God. Depart from me, ye cursed. Into everlasting fire!
Oh, Harry wasn't ready!
Hush, my darling!
Francis! He wasn't ready! He had no time!
Shelter from the stormy blast and our eternal home!
I would not for the world have had Whitfield upset you with his rantings. Once they would have driven him out of town. But there's a new time coming, and this Methodism is part of it. You're part of it, and Deborah and David and David's business. It's not for me. I belong to the old world that is passing. Mirabelle, I would ask you a question. I should not, but I can't help it. Do I seem so very old to you?
Old? Why, no.
Because all my life seems behind me. Yet loving you, it is only beginning. Mirabelle, on our wedding night, you said you could not love me. I've never questioned you again, but now, it's too much for me. I have to know. Have you learned to love me just a little?
Francis, I do not feel you old. I feel you good, so very good. Better far than I'd ever thought. But we're friends, aren't we? Good, trusting friends. I'm not made for love. It came only once, and that was a dream.
Friendship? What is friendship for a man? I don't want a friend. Mirabelle, my love for you is eating me up. I lie with you in my arms, and you're not there. I touch you, and you're gone. But I must have a little of you. I must have something.
Francis, I can't lie to you. Even if you kill me, I won't be dishonest. It isn't my fault that I'm apart. I'm apart even from myself.
Damn. Damn!
Francis, I would give you everything. I have never wanted so much to give myself. But I cannot. I should never have come. I'm wicked. I'm a cheat. I care for you so much, I'd give anything to make you happy. But love escaped me that day in Carlisle, and I cannot find a way to get it back. I would do everything. Show me how. Teach me.
I have my answer. You have a generous heart. I will be patient.
Teach me, Francis, and I'll learn. I will learn.
In this history of our father and the Herries dynasty, the time has come to speak of David. And since my brother is much too shy and modest to speak of himself, I must do it for him. In May 1758, the second year of father's marriage, he was 38 years old. He still looked boyish. His strength was prodigious. He could lift Statesman Peel with one hand and Fat Benjamin with the other, and men came from Ennerdale and Eskdale to watch him wrestle. They said he could be a terrible man with his fists and might kill somebody if he lost his temper. But he hardly ever lost his temper, and the kindliness of his nature drove him to find the better parts in others and wish everybody well.
I'm no saint, Deb.
No, you're not. You get exasperated and sulky and unjust like everybody else. But with you, it doesn't last. The only thing that lasts is your restlessness. And it worries me because it's getting worse. You need a woman.
I've had women.
Little encounters in Liverpool? Useless to a man like you. You need someone to love.
Deb, you amaze me.
I'm right, aren't I? You have a warm heart and it needs another.
Well, so does yours. Why don't you marry a clergyman? He asks you often enough.
How can I leave here with things as they are? Father needs me just now.
Oh, he hardly knows you're about. He's forgotten me. I miss him, Deb. I miss our old closeness.
I know.
Mirabel has gotten away. You know, I never thought it possible that a person could be so absorbed in another as Father is in her. I can see the attraction. She's beautiful and gentle and strangely different from other women. But she doesn't love him. He's hungry for what he can't have and he's forgotten everything else. Everybody else.
You're lonely, aren't you?
I've never been so lonely. Father's mind is somewhere else. Mirabel's is heaven knows where, and yours is in Cockermouth with the Reverend Sunwood.
David, you must marry.
Oh, yes, I must. But who? Oh, that's enough of that. I have to get ready. I'm riding over to Wasdale for sheep. A man called Denburn is selling some cheaply.
It'll be dark before you're down the path.
Oh, I'll be all right. I'll sleep at Wasdale Inn and I'll see Denburn tomorrow.
There are smugglers in Wasdale, and that inn has a bad reputation.
Oh, Deb, don't fuss. One look at me and the smugglers will run a mile.
Oh, you rely too much on your size. And I've heard of this Denburn. He lives at Scarf Hole.
Aye.
They say he's a gentleman from London who's fallen on evil days and turned ruffian. He's cunning. Be careful of him.
Be careful. Did they also tell you he has a daughter?
Wasdale Inn was small and stifling and stank of smoke and unwashed bodies. All there were rough country folk, except two, who were turning to leave as David came in. One was a man of about 50, tall and thin as a skeleton, with an ugly, sallow face. His companion was a young girl dressed for riding. Instantly, David's eyes were on her sturdy, big-breasted body, her laughing face, her brown hair. She seemed the most natural, open creature he had ever seen.
After the bed, are you?
Hey?
Aye. You'll have to share.
Then I'll share.
Time to go, Sarah.
Who's that?
Yeah? Oh, young Denburn.
Oh, is it now? Mr. Denburn!
I am Mr. Denburn.
My name is Herries. I've a piece of business with you.
Important business?
Well, to both our advantage. May I call on you?
I'm home tomorrow evening. Come, Sarah.
It's a dark night for riding over the pass, Mr. Herries.
Well, I arrived safely.
I'd be grateful for it.
Sarah, come away.
Good night, Mr. Herries.
Will you be at Scarf Hole tomorrow?
Yes, I live there.
Denburn's a queer beggar. Watch him. He's no farmer, though he talks big.
And the girl?
Girl's well enough.
She seemed very well to David. Already he thought her different to every other. Her voice held wisdom, fun and good health. Three splendid things as he saw the world. He recalled it that night and thought about her looks and felt 20 years old. Scarf Hall was hidden in woods under Green Howe. As David reached it the next night, the moon sailed over the screes and the house swam in a pale light like green water. A cat rubbed against his legs. An old man answered the door.
Come this way, mister. It's master's supper with Miss Denburn and Captain Barnett, old woman. That's Mr. Plain.
Mr. Harris. Welcome to my house, Harris. Sit with us. Have some pie. Glass of wine.
Thank you.
This is my friend, Captain Barnett.
Good evening, Captain.
Damn blast. Miss Denburn, you have met.
Hello, Miss Denburn.
Good evening, Mr. Harris.
My business is with your sheep, Mr. Denburn.
Huh?
I should have told you so at first. I must come back to look at them.
Sheep?
Good.
Well, you've come to the right place. There are no sheep like my sheep in the whole of Northern England. I know sheep better than anyone in this cursed neighbourhood, and rear them better than its wretched climate deserves. God, this whole country's a mire. And the Hanoverians are its swill masters.
Right.
Yes, really. I know what I'm talking about.
A pox on the lot! And to the Thames with a bastard.
Exactly so, Captain.
It is time for ladies to retire. Sarah?
Good night, Mr. Herons.
Allow me.
Ladies to retire.
Good night, Miss Denburn. I wish... That is...
Tomorrow, Mr. Harris.
You're a big man, mister. But I am a fighting man.
He's of a size to challenge. What say you, Captain?
Aye, let's try. Let's try a four.
I don't think so.
Ah, do you refuse? Come on, sit down. I'm strong enough for you.
I fancy he is, Harris. And I have fingers of steel.
Which crack walnuts like beads.
So, what say you? My fingers? Or the captain's muscle? Or both?
Two against one. In this lonely place. That's an invitation I must refuse. For tonight, at least. But I'll see you sheep in the morning. I'll take my leave, gentlemen. My thanks for the wine. And the music.
Early next morning, David walked down to the lake. Silver ripples ran to the screes. As he watched, he heard footsteps. It was Miss Denburn. Happy that fate was on his side, he joined her and they walked together. She seemed curious about him, so he told her about himself, his business, his home.
Rothwaite. I know Rothwaite.
Miss Denburn.
My name is Sarah. You are married, Mr. Harris?
Not yet.
Not married.
And you? Do you live alone here with your father?
Mr. Denburn is not my father.
He's not?
My parents died. He is my uncle and guardian.
I am glad he's not your father. I do not like him.
I've always hated him. He's a detestable man. He wants me to marry that pig of a captain.
Ban! That drunkard! You cannot!
I will not. But my resolve irritates them vastly. I'll return to London when... if I can. But Uncle's guardianship is strict, and he or the captain is always on the watch. You see, Mr. Harris, I'm a captive.
I can help you.
I must get back. It's dangerous for me to be away.
I shall release you, Sarah.
Why should you?
Because I love you.
What? Already?
I loved you at first sight in the inn. Sarah, I've never truly loved anyone until now.
What? You, the age you are and the handsome man you are and never loved anyone before?
No, never. I shall love you forever.
David Harris, what a delightful man you are. Give me your hand.
Shall we meet again?
This afternoon. There's a farm below Lingmell. I'll walk there with the old lady who is my duenna. She has a wonderful virtue. Sit her in a comfortable chair with a kerchief over her face and she falls asleep. She'll sleep in the farmhouse and not disturb us. I'll meet you in the meadow beyond. David.
Yes?
All my life I have been with bad, ugly thinking, vilely acting men. It is a great pleasure to meet you.
David saw Denburn's sheep later that morning. He bought the sheep and hated Denburn so much he could hardly keep his hands off his throat. Afterwards, he moved in a hazy vision of himself as husband of Sarah and father of her children. Wonder lit the world. He had never suspected that love would be like this. Nothing could prevent their marrying, though how that might be achieved, how he might snatch her from her captivity, never occurred to him. David could only think of one thing at a time, and for now, love was enough. Enough? It was so much that when he met Sarah on a sunny meadow under Lingmel, he could hardly speak.
Sarah, what I said this morning about loving you, I meant it.
I'm glad.
You're not angry?
How could I be angry when I loved you the first instant I saw you?
The first?
The very first.
I would kiss you, Sarah.
I would have you do it.
You must come away with me.
Of course I must, but how?
Walk out of the house. Stay out, now. I'll get my horse. We'll ride over the pass, down into Borrowdale and home. Sarah, come now.
Well, if I could, but it isn't so simple.
Why?
You can't realize what it's like for me here. I'm a prisoner, guarded always, watched always. And if I leave while the old lady is in charge of me, heaven knows what Uncle might do to her. I won't leave her to his fury, David. So it must be when she's not on duty.
This must be thought about. I must go home and make Harry's ready for you. I'll take the sheep in the morning.
Come back soon. David, let it be soon.
Oh, Sarah.
Oh, my love. David, you mustn't think, because I told you so quickly that I love you, that love is a light word for me. I've been moving to this my whole life long.
Well, I too. I'll love you forever, Sarah.
I hope you will.
Did you not hear me, father?
I heard you. Oh, damn this mud and these stones and my aching back. Damn you, boy.
Blast you, father, for a stubborn goat who won't answer a simple question.
I'm answering you. That is my answer. You can go to hell and find any girl there you fancy and do with her what you please. Oh, God almighty.
Shut is all right with you. Oh, father, every woman I see makes me realize how wonderful Sarah is. Oh, beside her, they're all wisps and weaklings.
Ah, and Mirabelle?
Well, Mirabelle is a wisp, but she's different.
Aye, she is. Oh, very different. David, I warn you, you may take this girl, but your heart will still be Harry's. Nothing can change that.
I know it, father.
But there is a bond between us.
Yes, there is.
Well, go to hell then!
You'll be there first!
David returned to Wasdale, and when it was dark, ran through the woods to Scarf Hall. It was raining. The world seemed deserted. But as he approached, light streamed from a window onto a little neglected garden. Creeping close, he saw Captain Ban sitting at the dining parlour table. He was alone and stupidly, angrily drunk. In a rage, the captain swept a chessboard off the table. Then the door opened and Sarah entered. She spoke. Ludicrously, the captain fell to one knee and overbalanced onto the floor. In that moment, David stepped into the light. Sarah saw him. Her face flushed. She put a hand to her breast. Quickly, she ran from the room.
David. Oh, David.
Sarah, it must be tomorrow night. I'll be here, on the lawn. What time shall it be?
At this time. But it's difficult. If I'm delayed, wait for me. Kiss me again. Hold me tightly. If I had other clothes, I would come now. Oh.
Do you love me? Have you thought of me?
I love you so much I haven't ate a thing these 2 days.
Just a captain.
Kiss me again. No, I must go. Until tomorrow.
David stayed in a secluded little valley all next day, which was cold with a great wind. In the evening, the wind dropped. The hills were clear. Later, there would be a moon. He returned to the garden and there performed the silliest act of his life. Impatient with waiting and finding the dining parlour window unlatched, he climbed inside. He crossed the room and crept out into the hall just as a wavering candle turned the corner. In a moment, he had the old lady in his arms.
Don't speak. Listen. You love Miss Denburn. I know you do. But she's in great peril, so must be away with me tonight. Do you understand? I regret the inconvenience, but every moment has its danger. Help us and you'll be rewarded magnificently. So, old lady, are you with us?
I am, Sarah told me. Oh, but if the captain's coming, we're all undone.
Not if you keep your nerve. Here, have some brandy. Go to Miss Denburn and tell her I'm waiting. Then return to your chamber.
I will. Captain Burn.
Don't be afraid, sister. Your virtue is safe with me. But drink a glass with me, huh? A nightcap.
No. Thank you, Captain, but I must see to my charge.
Well, tell her to come, then. She won't, though, will she? For all Ned's promises. Oh, so where's the future? And it rings all the time and... Oh, Christ! Let's have some light. Harry! What are you...
You door! That's for you, Captain. That will keep you quiet for a while.
David, you must be quick, my uncle.
Fetch the curtain, Vance. Yes. We'll tie his arms and legs. And my kerchief in his mouth.
If we push him through the window, we can hide him in the garden house. Nobody will look there.
What a notion. That will give us time to get away. I like your courage.
Tell me later. Hurry now. We're away. We're free.
How long will that garden house vault last?
Not long. The wood's rotten.
Well, the captain had a moderate taste for my fingers. I should do the kissing later. There's no time now. Soon there'll be the moon. Oh, you did that bravely, Sarah. I love you 1,000 times for it.
I did not know that love would be that.
Oh, nor I. Come, we must hurry.
What a fright I had. I was on the stairs by Uncle's door when the crash came. He ran out and asked me if I'd heard anything. Only an owl, I said. Go back, and he did. And I came down and found you fighting.
Oh, I could fight now. This would be a good place for swordsmanship if your uncle had the stomach for it.
Look, down the valley. Clouds of steam as though a great kettle were boiling.
The pass is confusing in mist. See how fast it's rolling up behind us.
It's above us already, blowing along the fell tops. Oh, how cold it grows and damp.
Oh, I know this mist. It thickens and swirls like a live thing, then opens for no reason. It's opening now.
David, they're behind us. Look how close they are.
Uncle and Captain, they won't use a pistol with you here. I'd enjoy a cut at them.
David, you mustn't fight, Uncle. He's evil. He has a power stronger than your goodness. Let us run.
I'll settle with him, don't worry. Sarah, stop. They're sprinkling tarn.
Oh, black it looks.
This is where I'll meet.
No, David.
I'll make a statement or two so your uncle understands my feeling for him before I take you from him. That is justice.
Justice? What does he know about justice?
That higher ground would be even better.
The moon has vanished. Here's the mist coming up again.
Harry!
Oh, and they're just below us.
Harry!
Now they've disappeared. Listen. We're cold. Stay there.
Where are you going? I can't see you.
I'll not move till this mist thins. It's the devil's work. Harris!
David!
Miss me, Captain. Now show me how you fight.
Just where are you?
Back, you Harris! I'll teach you to trust me up in a shed.
Sarah, are you all right?
Yes.
Where's Denver?
I don't know.
Come at you, you puppy!
David! David, is he dead?
No, I ran through his arm only, but he'll be no more trouble.
David, look up. Uncle is just above us, and the moon is coming again.
He has only his sword. Uncle, go home. 'Tis cold, and you should be abed. You're too old for the fells at nightfall.
But not too old for you, Harris. You've killed my friend.
and ravished my house where you were hospitably entertained. Now you shall repent it.
The captain is alive. Best take him back before he catches an ague. And for your hospitality, I ask you now, have I leave to wed your niece, who I love and will cherish always? Give us your blessing, and I'll carry the captain myself.
God almighty, you have a nerve, and shall repent.
David, be careful.
Or they'll beat you home for a bragging boy. No long-legged country bastard can frighten me. Leave the girl and run, or I'll slit your ears.
David! Oh, yes. Yes, that's the way. Drive him into the tarn, David. You have him.
Now, Uncle, you have no sword. What will you do? What shall I do? Shall I run you through in cold blood? Nay, I'll wrestle you for it. I'll kill you with my hands.
Don't, David. His fingers.
You'll regret it, you country bastard.
His fingers, David.
You should have listened to her.
Oh, Christ. David. Oh, you're free. You just... Yes, lift him. Lift him up. Throw him into the tarn. Oh, David. Oh, my darling!
Sir David won his girl and brought her home to Herries. The house was a volcano waiting to erupt, and all of us living there knew that when it did, nothing would ever be the same again.
In part three of Rogue Herries by Hugh Walpole, dramatized by Eric Pringle, Gavin Muir was Francis, Mark Bonner, David, Jane Wittenshaw, Deborah, Stephen Thorne, Uncle Pomfret, and Deborah Berlin, Mirabelle. Christopher Scott was the Reverend Sunwood and Captain Bann, Keith Drinkle, Mr. Denburn, Becky Hindley, Sarah Denburn, and Hugh Dixon, Whitfield. Other parts were played by Carolyn Jones, Johan Meredith, Chris Pavlow, and Alison Pettit. Rogue Herries is directed by David Blunt.